determines whether Democrats or Republicans control the U.S. Senate. That's Georgia On Our Minds, Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WBAI New York and WPFW Washington.
Georgia. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The time is 3 p.m. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi coming up.
Sisters and brothers, welcome to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM Radio, New York. I'm your host, Milton Alamadi. We have a very important program today. I have with me colleagues and comrades that I've worked with and I'm actually working with on a project. And I want them to discuss this project today. So I have with me Gordon Tapper. He is the President of United African Congress, and he's the founder of Give Them a Hand Foundation, and he'll speak a little bit about that as well. And I have with me Stephanie Evans, and she is a doctor, and she's also a professor at Columbia. Welcome to Black Star News Show.
Thank you, Milton.
It's okay, very good. Why don't we start with you, Gordon? We want to talk about Africa Rise 2020. So I want you to tell listeners what this project is about. And I'm happy to let listeners know that I'm also a part of this project. I've been working with Gordon and Stephanie, but I will be honest, they have been carrying the load and they've done a phenomenal job. So Gordon, please tell listeners what Africa Rise 2020 is all about.
Well, Africa Rise 2020, the basic rationale for that is to be able to improve the healthcare infrastructure in Africa. In most of the African countries, healthcare is really very weak. I think perhaps with the exception of South Africa and perhaps Nigeria, most of the other countries need a lot of help. The COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated the situation, and it is something that we have always known, that Africa has perhaps the highest rate of maternal deaths in the world, very high amount of infant deaths, I think the highest malaria deaths, and almost 25% of the deaths in the world from tuberculosis. So it does have a problem. Our Africa Rise 2020, Healthy and Stronger, proposes to purchase mobile clinics and also to build and to improve on existing clinics in the more remote, rural, underserved communities in Africa. So that is our main objective. And to do so, we are hosting a major virtual concert, a benefit concert to raise funds for the purchase of these mobile clinics.
And when is this?
This will take place on January the 16th. We cannot say exactly what the time is at the moment, as our partner, Viacom, through its BET and MTV channels, are scheduling it so that it can be viewed in the Americas, in Africa, in Europe, and Asia. So they're determining the time when that will take place. However, our website will provide all the information that is needed, which is AfricaRise2020.com.
Okay, so Stephanie, why don't you tell us a little bit about this virtual concert? Are there some performers that American listeners to this show right now are familiar with. I've heard their music before. I've seen them perform.
Absolutely, Milton. We have the host will be Dougie Fresh, and we'll include performances from a wide range of artists, including Nyla Blackman from Trinidad, Ricky Kedge from India, with a whole team, including Baba Mal and the a choir as well, a youth choir from South Africa. We have Daphne. We have Master KG of Jerusalem of Fame, and Julian Marley as well. So thanks for that lovely introduction. I want to let you also know that our broadcast partner in this venture is Viacom, and they have several platforms on which this will be airing. And just, I know that you did give me lots of accolades, and now I just wanted to let you know that I'm the Director of Medical Imaging at Harlem Hospital. So thank you for all of those, and I want everyone to come out and view this virtual event on the channels that we'll publicize, and it will be streaming as well on Facebook and other areas. We have some exciting performers.
Okay, would you like to let listeners know how you managed to get Viacom to become a media partner for this event? I imagine it wasn't an easy task.
No, it was not. Actually, we have a team from South Africa on the ground, and they were very instrumental in helping us to be able to partner with Viacom International. And from there, they were able to then get us a foothold on the platforms. So there we have a team, an event team that is multinational and international as well, that represents the diaspora from South Africa, as well as a team here in the United States from the diaspora.
Okay, would you like to talk a little bit about the timing of this project?
The timing of the project is that we're looking at having it in on several continents, including Asia, Africa, as well as the United States and Europe. So it will be streamed in each of those markets according to the best available time, so that everyone can have be able to see it maximally.
Okay, so in addition to that, why did this whole campaign come at this particular time?
So, Gordon, you might want to talk about our webinars. Those were the instrumental in bringing us to this phase, and then we'll add together.
Okay, well, Stephanie, I will certainly do that. Our organization, which is the United African Congress and the Give Them a Hand Foundation, have been engaged in trying to uplift certain situations in Africa, especially in healthcare, over the last several years. We were the first people who raised the alarm about the Ebola outbreak in West Africa back in 2014. We were involved in COVID-19 program in South Kivu recently, where we provided hand washing stations. We installed hand washing stations and distributed masks, etc., and trained community leaders using our infographics on proper sanitation and psychosocial support, and these were beneficial to them. So we have had an interest in healthcare. We began in early April to host webinars, and all of these webinars had the major theme, the coronavirus in Africa, and several sub-themes. For instance, the first sub-theme was stopping the spread and the panic. Mm-hmm. The next one was when we were China was throwing Africans out of China and mistreating them.
Right.
The next one was on humanitarian, human rights violations, xenophobia, racism. And we've gone on to have other webinars on the economic impact of COVID, the impact of COVID on food security, the impact of COVID-19 on gender disparities as it affects women and girls. So we've had a number of webinars that have been very well attended and have had the participation of very senior persons of government, from Ethiopia to Nigeria to Ghana, just to Sierra Leone, etc. And with a number of journalists reporting on conditions on the ground in their respective countries. So we do have an interest in healthcare in Africa, in improving the delivery of health services.
So Africa Rise could be seen then as an evolution of these series of webinars that you conducted. Would that be fair?
It certainly would be. We could say that. And I would also add that we are will be having a media event, some sort of a webinar, next week on the 11th, where we will have speakers, a few speakers. We will have a number of influencers, sports personalities, etc. And we will have Viacom. Viacom will have a speaker there. And we're looking forward to that as well. But if I may say, Milton.
Yes.
One of the very important performers who we will be having, and I think my colleague overlooked that, is Uma Sangare. And she is a real giant in the music industry in Africa and around the world. She will be a part of it. We also have speakers like the ambassador of Sierra Leone to the United States, the ambassador of Mali to the United States, and we are likely to have some first ladies, as a matter of fact, first ladies have expressed an interest in participating and supporting the project. So we are quite excited about that.
And the ambassador of Sierra Leone to the United States, of course, is a name that many New Yorkers would be familiar with, and that is Ambassador Sadiq Y, who had one point was the liaison officer at the NYPD with the African immigrant community. And at one point, he was a candidate for public advocate of New York City. Is that not correct?
Oh, you're absolutely right. He did run for public advocate as one of the first Africans to do so. And I believe his effort has resulted in a number of other Africans now saying, hey, I can do that too. And so we're finding Africans now putting themselves up for election in citywide and statewide positions. It's fantastic. But there's also another colleague of yours, of ours, of WBAI, who will be on this show, and that's Dr. Ron Daniels.
Excellent. Comrade Ron Daniels, of course. Very good, very good. So you're going to get extra promotion there. All right, listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Black Star News Show. I am your host, Milton Alimadi. My guest today is Gordon Tapper and Stephanie Evans, and we're discussing Africa Rise 2020, which is a campaign to raise funds to buy mobile clinics to supply to African countries and to serve the marginalized communities in the rural parts of Africa. And listeners, I need to remind you, you can only hear a show like this and this type of discussion on WBAI, because this is a commercial-free station. It is listener-supported. So we rely on your support. So I need to remind you, please be generous. Pick up the phone and dial 516-620-3602. Any contribution will be put to good use. You can even do something better. You can go to give and then the number 2, WBAI.org, and you can become a buddy. Adopt one of your favorite shows on WBAI. And I hope Black Star News Show is one of those shows. The money is taken out of your debit or credit card on a monthly basis. And I thank all the listeners that have become buddies and have been supporting us the last several weeks. Now, back to our guest. Stephanie, could you talk a little bit about the importance of private individuals, such as yourselves and diaspora Africans, in organizing this kind of fundraising event? Because quite frankly, we know that in many African countries, the governments don't put as much resources as they should into healthcare. I don't know of any African country that does not have large armed forces with tanks and jet fighters, but they seem to neglect the healthcare services. So talk about the importance of private individuals, such as yourself, such as Gordon, and many other people working on this campaign.
Health is a very important aspect. Without health, there is no economy, there is not all the other things. There's no one to drive the tanks, nobody available. And the health of our population, especially our men, women, and children, is very important to a healthy economy, a healthy country, and a healthy nation overall. Healthcare should be accessible. It should be available. And just basic things for like well baby care, things like access to maternal child health so children don't die before their fifth birthday, access to lactation services, access to clean drinking water, access to medicine, access to vaccinations. Those are all very important aspects of healthcare. Women should not have to walk so far to go to deliver their babies. We also need to be able to bring midwives. With all of the technology that we have at the moment, cell phones, we should be able to bring the doctor to the rural area to provide care and also provide specialty care as well. So men, women, and children do not have to walk miles to access health care. A healthy economy means you have healthy people, healthy children, and access to care. Okay, and that's now, important.
Now, Stephanie, you obviously, I know we want listeners to be able to go to the website, and you said to offer any contribution they can make. But is there any other way that somebody listening to this show can help? Do you need volunteers? Do you need other healthcare practitioners to be a part of this process? In what other ways can people help, people listening to this show right now?
Absolutely. As a public health specialist, I can say, my discipline is public health. I can say to people that we're always looking for folks to want to promote health care, health promotion, vaccination, and also help as we move ahead on this project to provide mobile clinics to the rural areas. It's a multi-year project that we can have folks really volunteer, call Gordon, follow up. Gordon, you might want to touch on what ways they can reach out and also donate as well. So Gordon, I can ask you if you can also add how are some of the ways that people can contribute to this process?
Well, we will certainly be, as a matter of fact, I've had people who are already volunteering services and supplies that they would like to be able to provide medical supplies to help with training special category who take care of pregnant women and
midwives and so on.
Training of midwives. I'm sorry to have stumbled on that, but we have people who are already volunteering to help in those areas in giving in kind donations and in services, and we welcome those.
So, if a major medical care company, a major hospital, a major institution is listening to this show right now, how do they get in touch with you to begin any discussion with you?
They should go to AfricaRise2020.com and they will see how they can connect with us on our respective websites. There's the Give Them a Hand website that's there. There's the Earth Rights Institute website, and they can connect with us, and we are looking forward to that. Just reach out to us, and we will send you a package telling you what it is that you can do to help us and how we can help you. For there are corporations out there who can do with the exposure that Viacom and this event can give to them, as we're looking forward to as many as a million, if not more, eyes on the event from all over the world. So especially up-and-coming companies, it will help their growth if they are on, if they are sponsors to the program. It would be an opportunity. It's a win-win opportunity for everyone.
Okay, now I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier in terms of the project in Kivu in the Democratic Republic of Congo and how you were able to intervene and help people in that particular community. How did that come about? Did the people in Kivu reach out to you, or were you able to identify a crisis point and then try to make the connection?
Well, in actual fact, it did not start out as a COVID project. Mm-hmm. If you will recall, DRC in North Kivu and other parts of DRC had a problem with Ebola. Yes. 2018, 2019, they had a problem with Ebola. And we were invited by the University of Butembo, the University of Beni in North Kivu, and invited by community persons on the ground who were familiar with some of the work that our psychologist had done in Sierra Leone. Dr. Judy Koryansky, when she was there, she led a mission there, and she gave a lot of valuable support to the communities, people who were, whose family members had died from Ebola, who were being rejected when they recovered and got back into the community. They were rejecting orphans whose parents had died, and there was fear, so much fear. Mm-hmm. And our team there helped to build the resilience of the people. That was known. And we were invited, and we began developing the program with University of Butembo, where we would be training social workers, pastoral students, as the University of Butembo is a religious college. And we were overtaken by conditions there, by a lot of violence, and many of the international agencies pulled out. So our initial effort to help with the Ebola situation was on hold. And so there were people who knew what we were planning on doing. And then the COVID took over, and we were invited to participate. We have a partner on the ground who is Hope and Health Vision, and they were very valuable in this process.
Okay,
that's how we got there.
Okay, very good. So you clearly have a track record of these type of activities on the continent, and that is why it's not surprising that it evolved into what is today one of the, I would suppose, the most major event of its kind that United African Congress is involved in, which is Africa Rise 2020. We are running out of time. Is there something that you would like to add, Stephanie? And then Gordon, is there something else you would like to add? Let's start with you, Stephanie.
Yes, I think that we as the diaspora and also Africa as well, we want to contribute to enhancing the healthcare infrastructure for the long term and not look at short term fixes because there may be another epidemic. The COVID-19 has shown the cracks in terms of our healthcare infrastructure. Right. And what we need to do is to build on that.
Okay, very good. And Gordon?
Well, what I want to emphasize is the need for listeners to support us, to donate. We want you to go to AfricaRise2020.com, take a look at what is there, the rationale for what we're doing, PowerPoint presentation on different aspects of this project, and donate.
And obviously you would welcome people that want to work with you even after the event itself. Is that correct?
Oh, certainly. Yes, definitely.
Okay. Thank you so much, both of you, for your time and for your hard work. Stay strong, stay well. And I hope it is a phenomenal show, and people should definitely tune in for that show on January the 16th. Thank you. Thank you for your time, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Milton.
Sisters and brothers, welcome back to the second half hour of Black Star News Show on WBI Radio 99.5 FM, New York. I am your host, Milton Alimadi. For the second half hour, my guest is Herman Ainebiona. He is the Diaspora Lead Coordinator for National Unity Platform, NUP. This is one of the parties running in Uganda's upcoming presidential election, which is January the 14th, actually next Thursday. The party's candidate is Member of Parliament Robert Kyagulanyi, aka Bobby Wine. And I've discussed him on a number of occasions on my show, so some listeners are familiar with him. And he's running against Uganda's dictator of 35 years, General Yoweri Museveni. He's been supported by the United States with about $1 billion in U.S. taxpayers' money for the last 35 years. And now he's facing a formidable candidate in the form of Bobby Wine. And Herman will tell us a little bit about himself and his role in this campaign. Welcome to Black Star News Show, Herman.
Thank you, Professor Alimadi.
Okay, well, why don't we start with this? Museveni has been in power for 35 years. I want to know, first of all, how old are you? Are you younger than the number of years Museveni has been in power?
Definitely. I was born in 1994. 27 now, 2021. So he's been in power for 35 years. So yes, to your question.
So you have never known any other president except dictator General Museveni?
Nope.
All right. So
I neither have my sisters. I have a sister who is 32. She's the oldest and she doesn't know any other president, sadly.
Okay, very good. All right, so tell listeners, first of all, obviously you're here in the United States. Tell us what you do as the Diaspora Lead Coordinator and the role that Diaspora has played so far in this election in Uganda.
Yes. People say a leader or, you know, head of, I say servant. I am a servant of the movement. I'm a servant of the people of Uganda. Mm-hmm. And I serve as the head of the Diaspora NUP. And we basically have three roles, and that is organize, mobilize, and sensitize.
Okay.
That's how we brief, you know, that's how we summarize our roles. And I can explain those a little bit if you, if that's okay. Organize is where you have, you know, different departments within the structure. So we have a finance department, we have a legal department. Mm-hmm. We are in a political campaign, but unfortunately we have a medical department. Mm-hmm. Because people were killed and beaten and all that.
Okay, let's focus on that for a little bit. When you say people are beaten, people are killed, you're talking about the ongoing campaign in Uganda and people that have been killed by the security forces who report to General Museveni. Is that correct?
Definitely. And we, you know, we strongly believe it is convincing from all the videos and all the evidence that, you know, these orders come directly from either his generals or himself, because all commanders of the police, and unfortunately military, which I don't understand why military is involved in an election, but you know, they are, whenever you watch these operations, because we have some informal form of media, social media is very informal media and it gives raw info regarding how things are happening on the ground. If you watch this, they are always on the phone. It appears like someone else is telling them what to do. This situation,
you're talking about the soldiers and the military commanders.
Yes, the policemen and the military. So it's convincing that, you know, Museveni's close allies or cronies or whatever you can call them, or himself, they're giving these directives.
In real time.
Yeah, shoot, to throw tear gas, to run over people,
right,
and to chase down cars and knock cars and destroy property. And this is our reality, unfortunately.
Right. I saw one incident when Bobi Wine was going to campaign in Jinja, I believe. He was blocked. He was led by the security forces to a side road of the main road. And then they shot the tires of his automobile to demobilize it. And then when he came out to ask them why they were doing that, and that's when they started firing, and he had to actually duck. So I actually saw that in real time as well. And I tend to agree with you, because I find it very difficult to believe that in Uganda, a security officer, a policeman or a soldier would actually dare to shoot at or shoot or harm a candidate without these instructions coming from dictator Museveni himself.
Right. And it's a yes and no situation, because some of these people are at the same time trying to impress him.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they go the extra mile, which includes killing people, so that they can keep their relationship, or they can get a promotion or the like. Most people who have shot at people or attempted to disperse crowds have been promoted, and none of them has been brought to book. So it's highly suspicious that it's either over ambition for the people in the military, or direction from their commander in chief.
Okay, I hear some protests in the background. Is that Junior protesting? should we proceed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Now let me ask you. A prominent candidate in the past, Dr. Kizza Besigye, who led was a candidate for the Forum for Democratic Change. And he had said that, and which is true, in Uganda, each president has either bombed his way into power or been bombed out of power. Meaning there's never been a peaceful transition of power from one president to the other. So let me ask you, do you think this time around there's a possibility that can change?
Yes, and that's what our campaign is about. It's about a democratic transition without any bombing of people or any loss of lives, strictly democratic effort. And the movement was initiated as People Power, and our pillars or hopes are in three things. First is the people, which is why it's People Power initially before it transitioned into a political party. The second is the law. Those are our two major pillars. And then finally, but most importantly, is the Almighty. So those three pillars are the major are the things we ride on, and none of those have violence embedded in them. Even if we intended, let me just add this. Even if there was a plot or plan or whatever for military action, like, you know, like a few people say, or like the Museveni regime usually accuses People Power, we don't have the resources to do that. I mean, the guns that Museveni uses are purchased by, you know, either Chinese or, you know, sometimes even American,
right?
American donations.
Right.
We do not have that. So we are not in capacity to set up an operation like he is.
Okay, but the other part of that question was to say that people say that in the last election, for example, people believe Dr. Besigye actually defeated the dictator, and the dictator just refused to yield power. So if somebody asks you, do you think this could be different this time, assuming, and you know, your candidate obviously has many advantages, and the key one is 80% of the population is under the age of 35. And I've been watching some of the videos of the people coming by just to show the support as he drives past these towns. So it seems like your candidate has an obvious advantage in the numbers. But even if he does win, do you think the dictator will step down? That is the key question.
Yeah, well, I don't think if we win, he still has a choice at that point. I think what makes us a little bit different is that we plan to have sufficient evidence of our win. You know, we've mobilized, we have 30, you know, between 34,000 and 35,000 polling stations in our country.
Uh-huh.
And we're trying to make sure that we have polling agents covering all those polling stations. Now, a polling agent is someone who verifies on behalf of the political party the results from each polling station, because the vote count is done right after voting at the polling station before the results are transmitted to the Electoral Commission.
Correct.
So in the past, you know, the capacity has not been there, not... And we are only fortunate that we have so many people working on a voluntary basis.
Okay.
That we have the capacity to cover all these polling stations, which has not been so much the case in the past.
Okay, so they will be able to record this and take images, is that it, and then relay it to a location where they could be safely secured? Is that the...
Definitely. Yes. That is the exact plan. And we just launched, the way they'll use it will be through an app. We just launched an app called YouVote. And that's the tool that we'll be using to do all this work and set up predictions and all this interesting stuff on election day. Yes.
So this is quite revolutionary in a way, the way you're running this campaign.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yes, no doubt about it. And all, you know, I've told you about the app, I've told you about the polling agents. There's so much more I can tell you. The people in our medical team, the people in our legal team, 98% is all voluntary. It's crazy.
These are people who are working for change in Uganda.
Who want to see new, who want to see better. These are humanitarians, I would call them. The bloodshed in our country is so saddening that if you paid attention, you would definitely want to do something.
Okay, and let's talk a little bit about that bloodshed. And a lot of it, as I did say, the United States has supported General Museveni for a long time, basically because he serves their regional interests. He's like the local regional sheriff on behalf of the United States. And I want you to tell some of the listeners, give some examples of the atrocities that have been committed by General Museveni's regime, courtesy to U.S. taxpayers' money. Could you talk about that for a little?
Yes. The one that is so fresh is the COVID relief, the COVID aid that that Museveni has received over the past months of COVID. Uh-huh. The cars that, for instance, EU, the European Union, and funds, I think around, you know, a total of a tune of $900 million has been received by the Ugandan government, and nothing has been allocated to Ugandans. I mean, a COVID test in Uganda is $80 for a country where more than half the population live on a dollar a day. So that in itself is a show of impunity. But regarding the bloodshed, these funds, these cars are the cars that are running over people. Recently, a gentleman called Frank Sentamu, his soul rest in peace, was run over by a police truck that, you know, that we believe has been purchased using some of these funds. So, yes, in many ways, the U.S. is contributing to the bloodshed in Uganda.
And then, of course, there was that incident, I think it was November 18, when Bobi Wine was arrested, and then there was a protest throughout the country. And I understand anywhere from, was it 50 to 85 people were shot and killed as a result of that?
Yes. He was arrested from Bale, and Bale, which is on the eastern part of the country. And like I said, our power is in the people's hands. So people were very upset about that because it was an unwarranted arrest, a random arrest during a political campaign. And there were protests, there were demonstrations, but how Museveni has responded to demonstration has been using violence. Gunmen without no police uniform, no military uniform, in just plain clothes. There's a picture of a lady in sandals walking around the street holding an AK-47 shooting at people. So these images, you know, on that day alone, 100 people were lost, 100 people died, were killed, and we believe it's all the suppression and bloodshed. Museveni is only able to afford these things through donations and loans from the West America, to be exact, and China.
And so obviously some of these incidents are meant to intimidate potential voters, right, to scare people from coming to vote. Do you think that is one of the factors they're hoping to just create an environment of fear?
Of fear, exactly, definitely.
Do you think they might succeed in doing that?
Well, they have succeeded for 35 years. They have been successful. They've been very successful for the past 35 years. But people have become more resilient, and that's why they have to kill more people. The killings in Uganda are exponential. The number of deaths is exponential because people are simply tired of Museveni rule. 35 years is a long time. So the more resilient people become, the less scared of the guns and bullets, and that's how people end up losing their lives, because like we said initially, the Museveni police and military will shoot at them.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Black Star News Show, and I am your host, Milton Alimadi. And listeners, you know this is a commercial-free station, and we're able to be commercial-free because of support of listeners such as you. So I just want to remind you to pick up the phone and dial 516-620-3602. Any donation you make to WBAI will be put to good use, and that's where we are able to bring you these type of conversations that you're listening to right now. You can also adopt one of our shows as a buddy, in which case the money is taken out on a monthly basis from your credit card or debit card, and you can do so by going to give, and then the number 2, WBAI.org. I now go back to my conversation with the Diaspora Lead Coordinator for the National Unity Platform. His name is Herman Ainebiona. And the party, of course, is contesting the presidential elections next Thursday in Uganda. And the candidate is Bobby Wine. So, Herman, I'd like to ask you now, an American listener who's listening to you right now, and they're learning for the first time that their taxpayer money is contributing to the atrocities in Uganda and perpetuating this tyranny in Uganda. What do you say to them? What is your suggestion to them? What should they do? Somebody who cares.
Yes. First of all, our movement is very popular on social media. And we would, you know, we would like to be followed. We would like, you know, every American or every person, every human being, to keep their eyes closely on Uganda, especially in these very difficult times. You know, share that information, make it public. We believe that the more we expose Museveni, maybe, hopefully, he becomes a little shy and the killings are suppressed. So that's very important that people follow us and watch us. And you can go to the National Unity Platform official Facebook page. You can also go to Bobby Wine's Facebook page, Honorable Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, who is the presidential aspirant, his Facebook page and his Twitter account, and follow the incidents. There's at least, you know, 3 or 4 posts there a day regarding the things that are happening to the opposition in Uganda. The other way to contribute is to make phone calls to senators and congressmen and women, and to talk about to ask them to support bills in regards to Uganda, to support all the legal.
Right. In fact, there was a resolution by Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey, who actually is calling for the U.S. to consider some forms of sanctions against specific commanders involved in these atrocities, and also to put pressure on the regime itself in terms of conducting free and fair elections. That was by Bob Menendez. So I think that information is also on his website. But let me ask you this other question also. Do you think that part of the challenge is that so many members of the regime, whether the ones in government, whether the ones in the police force or the military, also fear the consequences of change? They fear what will happen if their man, General Museveni, is no longer in power. And to people like that, who may actually want change, but have a fear of the consequences, what do you say to people like that?
I say fear not. I say fear not. There's nothing to be scared of. Change is good. Unless if you're referring to the criminals, Milton. If you're referring to the criminals, I would
just
be scared.
I'm just asking you.
If you're referring to the criminals, which of which the criminals are very limited in number, But for every other person in the Museveni government shouldn't be scared of change. Actually, change is a good thing. It will give us a better country. There's a lot of hope and a lot of plans we have in place for Uganda and the management of the resources of our country. So change is a good thing, and it will help us in development.
And this is really a time for the youth, not only in Uganda, but in Africa.
Right.
I mean, in Africa, yeah. I saw one figure which said more than 60% of the population is under the age of 25. Why should we have people in their 70s and 80s and even in 90s still wanting to determine their destiny?
Right. Good question. And also, if you look at the approach and level of development, can you believe there's a social media tax in Uganda? You pay tax to use your Facebook and WhatsApp, which is very, very saddening. But every youthful person, or every person my age, is kind of gets their information from social media. They use social media more than mainstream for the most part, and so it's hard to have countries run by 70-year-olds and the majority of the population is 35 and below. I think that the other reason we have decent support and Besigye and the other old opposition candidates in Uganda is because Bobi Wine himself is a youth. He's very youthful and he relates very closely with the people. That's why the support is massive. So, yeah.
He's 38 years old, right?
Yes.
All right. So we are running out of time. And quickly tell listeners, what kind of Uganda do you envision, you yourself?
I envision a Uganda with actual rule of law, mm-hmm. and not ruled by law. That means that if someone is corrupt, they answer to that. If someone murders someone on the street, if a police car runs over a civilian, there's accountability for that, which is rule of law, which is one of our core ambitions. It's one of the promises in our manifesto. It's a people-centered government with rule of law. So that is, I think that once we have that in Uganda, that's the only thing we need. We don't need any new policies. We don't need any right. Much loans or donations, or it's rule of law that is the key,
right. So
that's my vision for the new Uganda.
You want the constitution instead of one man rule under right. General Museveni.
Definitely.
Okay. On that note, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for your time. And obviously, we hope to see that transformation next week. On Thursday. And one more time, just give out the social media contact information again before we close.
Yes. If you want to know more about this revolution and our objective, please follow Bobi Wine on Facebook. His page name is Bobi Wine. But his actual name is Honorable Kyagulanyi Ssentamu Robert. Also, the official Facebook page of the National Unity Platform is a good place to find up-to-date current information regarding the status of our revolution in Uganda.
Thank you so much. On that note, the present and the future belong to the youth of Africa. Listeners, thank you for joining us today. Follow me at Ali Mahdi, and also remember to go to blackstarnews.com. See you next week, listeners, and thank you once again to our guests.
Thank you, Professor Ali Mahdi.
Days Against Guns show, our special guest is author Sebony Selassie, who joins us to talk about her brand new book, You Belong. The book is a joyous celebration of togetherness and connection, something that has been stripped away from us all, especially in the past 4 years. How do we overcome divisiveness? What does belonging mean for activists and those who are fighting for justice? And how can belonging connect us to the fight against gun violence? Join us this Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. right here on listener-sponsored WBAI Radio.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Chris Bengert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. It's decision day in Georgia today as hundreds of thousands of voters head to the polls to cast their ballots in the two runoff races that will decide which party controls Congress. Republicans David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler are facing off against Democratic challengers John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. All four ran on November 3rd, but none got enough votes under state law to win the Senate seats outright, forcing today's runoffs. Polls close at 7 p.m., and races are expected to be close. Police in Washington, D.C. arrested the leader of the far-right Proud Boys group on suspicion of burning a Black Lives Matter banner torn from an historic black church during a December protest. Enrique Tarrio, the chair of the Proud Boys, was charged with destruction of property, and police added weapons charges after Tarrio was found to be carrying two high-capacity ammunition magazines. The Proud Boys and other groups are expected to participate in protests today and tomorrow in support of Trump's false claims that he won the November election. About 340 Army National Guard troops are expected to be deployed to help D.C. police keep order. More than 100 House members have now said they will contest Congress's counting of electoral votes taking place tomorrow. Last week, Senator Josh Hawley agreed to join them, at least for the state of Pennsylvania. And over the weekend, 12 senators led by Ted Cruz said they would reject the votes from all contested states and demand an audit of election results in those states. These efforts will not change the outcome of the election. And as the joint congressional session nears, a growing number of GOP senators are breaking with their colleagues and plan not to oppose the electoral vote count. Over 200 workers at Google parent company Alphabet formed a labor union, the group announced yesterday. The Alphabet Workers Union said they don't expect to bargain for a contract anytime soon, but aim to create a more formal structure to organize future protests. Labor organizing in the tech sector has recently focused on protests against sexual harassment, as well as company ties to U.S. military and border patrol operations. The Alphabet Workers Union will be part of the Communication Workers of America, Local 1400. The United States launched additional sanctions targeting Iran today, blacklisting 12 Iranian steel and metals businesses and one Chinese firm accused of producing thousands of tons of material for Iran. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said the goal was to deny revenue to the Iranian government. The Iranian economy has already been severely harmed by U.S. sanctions, like those levied against its banking sector in October. These latest sanctions come after Iran ratcheted up pressure on the U.S. and its allies to return to the landmark 2015 nuclear deal. Iran began enriching uranium to 20% and seized a South Korean tanker in the Strait of Hormuz yesterday. Iran's top diplomat acknowledged that the moves are fully reversible if U.S. sanctions are eliminated. Democrat Terry McAuliffe announced a massive fundraising haul yesterday, raising $6 million in his bid to return as Virginia's governor. No other Virginia gubernatorial candidate has ever raised as much money so early in the campaign. The state holds its Democratic primary on June 8th and its general contest November 2nd. At this point 4 years ago, now Governor Ralph Northam had only raised half McAuliffe's current war chest. Other Democrats contending for the party's nomination are Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, State Senator Jennifer McClellan, Delegate Jennifer Carroll Foy, and Delegate Lee Carter. Princess Blandine, whose brother, Marcus David Peters, was killed by Richmond police during a mental health crisis in 2018, is running under the newly formed Liberation Party. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 43 degrees and overcast. In New York City, 40 degrees and overcast. For WPFW in Washington and W.